It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
At the end of the day, like I said, our job as police officers is to present them with the evidence. The apology comes from the person that did this. If you want to say you're innocent of a situation, then you take your day in court. I would never, if someone falsely accused me, I would never hide behind a brokered deal in secrecy, period.
I want to say, and I want to emphasize, underscore what the superintendent just said. In the end of the day, it's Mr. Smollett that committed this false claim upon two individuals and who also testified, but also on the city. One action, yes, we're looking at the state's attorney. It is not on the level from beginning to end, and there needs to be a level of accountability throughout the system, and this sends an unambiguous message that there is no accountability, and that is wrong.
That was the voice of Eddie Johnson, the police chief in Chicago, Illinois, and the mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel. It was shocking yesterday when Jussie Smollett, after perpetrating his fraud on the Chicago police, after claiming attacks because he was gay, attacks because he was black, using a noose, paying Nigerians to do this to sort of rough him up, and then making the whole thing up, which has been, you know, that's what the police found and verified and documented and talked to us about. They said they had a hard, fast case. They sent it off to the state's attorney in Cook County. And the state's attorney, whose name is Kim Fox, decides, no, we're going to throw all those charges out and he will just pay, you know, we'll keep his $10,000 and everything will be right. Well, there's a longer report. Matt Finn will give it. And then I have a lot to tell you about it. Let's listen.
Do I think justice will serve? No.
Chicago's police superintendent and Mayor Rahm Emanuel are slamming the Cook County State's Attorney's Office for suddenly dropping 16 felony counts of lying to police against actor Jussie Smollett.
He did this all in the name of self-promotion. This is a whitewash of justice.
It's Mr. Smollett who committed this hoax, period. If he wanted to clear his name, the way to do that was in a court of law.
In an emergency hearing today, a judge granted prosecutors' request to drop charges against Smollett. In a statement, the Cook County State's Attorney's Office wrote, after reviewing all of the facts and circumstances of the case, including Mr. Smollett's volunteer service in the community and agreement to forfeit his bond to the city of Chicago, we believe this outcome is a just disposition and appropriate resolution to this case. Smollett speaking out after the ruling.
I've been truthful and consistent on every single level since day one. I would not be my mother's son if I was capable of one drop of what I have been accused of.
Superintendent Eddie Johnson says police carried out a meticulous investigation with dozens of detectives and concluded that Smollett cut the Osundaro brothers a $3,500 check to pretend to beat him, call him racial and homophobic slurs, and say this is MAGA country. Smollett's attorney says Chicago's top cop is wrong and accused the police of trying the case in public.
I have no idea where that came from, which is why you should allow investigation and allow the state to investigate a charge before you go to the press.
Executive producers for the hit show Empire cut Jussie Smollett's character from the final two episodes of this season. Now, 20th Century Fox is standing by him. Writing in a statement, Jussie Smollett has always maintained his innocence, and we are gratified that all charges against him have been dismissed.
The Cook County State's Attorney's Office in a statement now says that it did not exonerate Jussie Smollett today and that it stands by Chicago police. The charges were dropped against Jussie Smollett in exchange for community service and that he forfeit that $10,000 bond.
All right, Matt Flynn of Fox News, and so that's Matt's report. Now, let me just say something, because Chicago is my hometown, and Chicago has been the brunt of jokes now for a long time, and deservedly so. Look at the kind of politicians we've given you, and I have to say that it wasn't always that way. I mean, there's been corruption in the city for years. That's actually the way the city has run. It's by the union. The corruption has been with unions and leaders. But the wheels turned smoothly, and law and order was not anything you questioned. I mean, the police in Chicago, for all you may have heard about them, are actually a very fine group. There are exceptions, of course, but they are really great. No wonder. That's why Chicago, for years, was such a safe third largest city in the United States, because there was law and order, because the Chicago police take their job seriously. So this was an incredible slap in their face. And by the way, the Cook County prosecutor used to have a great reputation as well. And so it's just a gut punch to see now the lack of trust that Chicagoans, just average Chicagoans, must now not have in their ability to get justice or even to be safe on their streets. Because what does this say to criminals? What does this say to liars, to fraudsters, that, you know, do what you want, because justice, you know, is a little bit fluid right now. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about this situation because I think you'll find it interesting, and it is pretty jaw-dropping, and here it is. Okay, so Jussie Smollett has been released because of he's done community service. He's paid the price. He's done the job. He's done the time. This is what he did. He went to Rainbow Push. That's Jesse Jackson's organization, and he did 8 hours of service on March the 23rd and 8 hours of service on March the 25th, and that included working in the bookstore, critiquing in the broadcast studio, kind of coaching them, and speaking to students and parents who visited. That was his penance for what he did in Chicago, perpetrating a fraud. But, you know, that's his penance. And so when digging deeper into this, I have learned a lot of things I want to share with you. Jussie Smollett's family, I have mentioned this to you before. I had told you that his sisters worked in the Obama campaign. I also told you that there was a video, I think we posted it on our Facebook page, of Jussie dancing with Michelle Obama at a public event. Well, now we know that Jussie Smollett's mother is very close friends with 60s radical communist Angela Davis. Anybody remember that name? Those of you that are older will remember. She was a black woman with a big afro who was involved in lots of crime and sedition, really. I thought she wasn't charged with it. Angela Davis was a dangerous character, and she grew up to be a professor at one of our universities, I think at University of New Mexico. So Angela Davis, who has never repented for anything she did in the 60s, who's just as radical now, if she actually expressed her embarrassment at joining the Communist Party because they weren't radical enough for her. So Jussie Smollett's mother is buddies with Angela Davis and some of the other 60s radicals. The founder of the SPLC, whose name escapes me in this moment, also a radical leftist. So he's part of this group. And so they have connections, of course, with the Obama campaign and also with the old radicals of the left. So in the story, then, we learn that Michelle Obama got involved in this. Well, at least her former chief of staff, Tina Chen, got involved in this and tried to persuade Eddie Johnson to turn this case over to the FBI. We have email correspondences back and forth from Chen and it gets very confusing. Chen and Fox, Kim Fox is the state's attorney, kind of talking about how they might make this happen. We find out that Kim Fox was very close to the Smollett family also. And initially, she recused herself from Jussie Smollett's case. But then she, just sort of changed her mind. And, she turned it over to her assistant, who is, his name, Joseph Maggots. He's been at the state's attorney for Cook County for something like 22 years. His statement in issuing this pardon was, "The fact that Smollett feels that we have exonerated him, we have not. I can't make it any clearer than that." So he said that while exonerating him, we have not exonerated him. But obviously, Joseph Maggots was doing the bidding of Kim Fox. So now, here's the situation. Oh, and so it's even more interesting. If you can, we need a flow chart here. But Tina Chen, who was Mrs. Obama's chief of staff in the White House, is a close friend of Rahm Emanuel's wife, which is ironic since you heard Mayor Emanuel call this a whitewash. He's pretty upset about this. So we know that Tina Chen and Kim Fox were corresponding about this, trying to get Jussie Smollett off. They were working on it, they didn't think Eddie Johnson was going to buy it, and so they had to do, well, we don't know what else they did. They obviously did something because suddenly we have this forgiveness of Jussie Smollett, or dropping of all the charges, and as long as, you know, we get the $10,000 from him. So, all right, this is what I want to tell you now about. We'll go to Kim Fox. We're learning a lot about Kim Fox. Kim Fox she challenged Anita Alvarez, who was the sitting state's attorney. Anita Alvarez was kind of came in the crosshairs of the progressives in Chicago because they didn't think she did enough in the murder of that black teenager, Laquan McDonald, by a Chicago police officer, or the killing of him. And I don't remember, he was standing in the street. I'm sure you've seen that photo. And I don't claim to be an expert about that case, so I'm not commenting on that. But that's why Anita Alvarez, her star fell with Chicago voters. So Fox ran, the current state's attorney, who has now let Jussie off, ran on a platform of criminal justice reform. She told a local ABC News affiliate, WLS, that she wanted to focus on restoring faith in our criminal justice system and bridging the divide between the community and law enforcement. But now we go deeper into who Kim Fox is, and we find out that when she was running for state's attorney, she got funds, she got money from two interesting sources of cash. Twin donations of $300,000 from a super PAC supporting her called Illinois Safety and Justice. It turns out the sole donor to Safety and Justice is none other than George Soros. So George Soros, then, we know now, has been on a campaign for the last several years. This part of his record you may not know. He's been getting involved in local races for prosecutor, state's attorney, and district attorney, backing left-wing candidates, of course. And the idea, I guess, for George Soros is to change our criminal justice system so that maybe we could say there is no justice for law-abiding citizens, and certainly justice, if you mean getting what you deserved, is not what's meted out to criminals. And so he spent $333,000 of his own money to Fox's super PAC. Now, the other super PAC, they don't know who that is yet. It's an outside group, but because it's called dark money, because the donors are not required to be listed, we don't exactly know who it was. So Soros, by the way, was involved in 21 district attorney races around the country, and we could track them, but that's been his latest project. So that's Kim Fox. And then we go back to Tina Chen, who is the former Mrs. Obama chief of staff, who was interceding with Kim Fox on behalf of our perpetrator, Jussie Smollett. And we find out that this is interesting. I mean, it makes me laugh, but it's not funny at all. Tina Chen, the reputable person that she is, she has now been tasked with going to the Southern Poverty Law Center and sorting things out there. You know that the Southern Poverty Law Center has become a mess. You know that its founder, Morris Deeds, was fired this week, and then Richard Cohen resigned. He's one of the other. He's been the long-term spokesperson for that, and much more than that, the chief executive. And that the Southern Poverty Law Center is awash in $500 million in offshore accounts and money. And the corruption there is unbelievable. So Tina Chen is going to go sort that out. Tina Chen, who tried to evidently successfully interceded to get Jussie Smollett out. Another thing, David Axelrod, of course, who is a leftist red diaper baby, by the way, from Chicago, said, unless some better explanation surfaces, here's the lesson of this weird turn. You can contrive a hate crime, make it national news, get caught, and if you are a well-connected celebrity, get off for $10,000 and have your record expunged and files sealed. General Michael Flynn's brother responded to Axelrod, or you can become the incoming national security advisor of a duly elected president and have your finances threatened and your family just because you helped real Donald Trump get elected. What do you think about that, David? I'll be back in just a second. Sandy Rios in the morning.
On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, we took the spices that we'd prepared and we went into the tomb. We found the stone rolled away from the tomb. When we went in, we didn't find the body of our Lord Jesus.
Who took him? Where is he?
Who took him?
Why do you look for the living among the dead?
Where's Jesus?
He's not here. He has risen.
Jesus was alive. He's alive.
Jesus was betrayed, abandoned, mocked, beaten, and then crucified on a cross for sinners like you and me. The Son of God was buried, and after 3 days, he rose from that grave. American Family Radio encourages you to rejoice in the glorious reality that our God is a living God.
The movie Unplanned is the story of Abby Johnson, a former abortion center director who became a pro-life activist after witnessing an abortion for the first time herself. Hello, I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association, and you need to go see this movie, Unplanned. We've screened that here at American Family Association and American Family Radio. It is one of the most powerful films I've ever seen, and especially having to do with the pro-life issue. This was a woman who was very steeped in Planned Parenthood, and then she turned around, and God showed her what she was being a part of, and she left that and now speaks out on behalf of life. So it's a great story. It's a true story, and it's a movie that you want to go see, so make plans to do so.
Unplanned, in theaters nationwide March 29th. Not suitable for younger viewers.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
The friendly skies just got confusing. More next.
Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu.
United Airlines will now allow passengers to choose their own gender, announcing new non-binary gender options, Mr., Miss, and MX. Passengers will also be able to identify as male, female, undisclosed, or unspecified. United says they stand in solidarity with passengers, whether they identify along the binary of male or female or not. The airline recently partnered with Human Rights Campaign, a radical leftist group that routinely targets Christians. United's employees were forced to attend training classes on preferred pronouns, the persistence of gender norms, and LGBT competency in the workplace. How about a training class on not losing our luggage or taking off on time? I wonder how long it'll take before some wiseacre tries to fly free by identifying as a piece of carry-on luggage. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Anticipation is building to a fever pitch.
For 2 years, the coverage of the Robert Mueller probe has been dramatic, relentless, and constantly suggesting that President Trump's conduct was worse than Watergate.
We do know that Donald Trump Sr. has lied throughout this investigation.
This goes to the heart of everything we've been talking about for the last couple of years, the collusion and the cover-up.
But as the investigation ends with no indictments for Russian collusion or obstruction of justice, the press has come under harsh scrutiny, along with a series of high-profile mistakes, from ABC's Brian Ross making a false accusation against Michael Flynn, to BuzzFeed saying Trump directed Michael Cohen to lie to Congress. And condemnations are coming from the right and the left.
How in the world did several major news organs, networks, newspapers, and so on, devote so much time to what turned out to be utterly baseless speculation?
It was continuously on MSNBC, which, let me just say, should have their top host on prime time go before the cameras and hang their head in shame and apologize for lying to people.
It's time for CNN to issue an apology. CNN
banned me from their air because I was being too fair.
The president tweeting today, the mainstream media is under fire and being scorned all over the world as being corrupt and fake by pushing the Russian collusion delusion. They truly are the enemy of the people and the real opposition party.
I am outraged by the behavior of these networks.
Okay.
Collusion, 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 collusion,
first
collusion.
All, let,
no collusion.
Okay.
But today, a growing media counterattack.
Don't knock reporters at the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Wall Street Journal or the broadcast networks for doing their job right.
Of course a criminal probe yielding 37 indictments had to be covered, and of course the lack of further charges doesn't mean all those stories were wrong. It's the volume, the tone, and the doomsday predictions that have the news business very much on the defensive.
That was Howard Kurtz of Fox News last night, and I think, you know, this continues to be a story, and it needs to be. Whether we recognize it or not, and I'm encouraging you to recognize it, we really are at a pivotal moment. I think most of us felt that the press was out of control. I've actually, again, known this since this early 70s, when we started hearing all of these reports about Vietnam and the body bags and the coat hangers and the coat hanger abortions and all of this, when I instinctively knew this was, it can't be true. There's just something wrong with this. And I would get angry, but there was no counter source of media. And now we know that this whole trend in media has been taking place now for the last several decades. And it's been a degeneration so that now it really is full-blown propaganda. And that is so dangerous. You know, a free press is so important to a free society. Somebody needs to be able to tell the truth and get the word out about what is actually true. When you don't have any kind of media or any kind of truth spoken, you have, you know, cultures and lands and countries that are sealed off from the world, like the Soviet Union was, like North Korea still is. I think I told you when I was in North Korea on 9/11, we were there for about 4 days or 3 days inside North Korea. We got no news at all. It was so shut off that we did not even know about 9/11 until 9/12, when we passed over back into northern Manchuria in China, and that's when we really found out what happened, that there was a 9/11, 24 hours late. Because they get no news, they know nothing. And the other side effect that was that the people in North Korea, the women still dressed like the 50s. Their hair was still that little do with the curled bangs. And I mean, it was amazing. It was like stepping back in time because it was the 50s when they last had contact with the outside world. So all of their thoughts and their views was controlled by the government and by the media that they were able to access. And so is that what we want, really? Do we want a media that does not tell us the truth? Can you see how they can mold your mind? And mold the minds of your kids, certainly when they have the cooperation of the education structure and bureaucracy in this country and educators in colleges and universities, it's pretty easy to do. And then coupled with the ignorance of parents even now, who are the product of public schools and can't even argue properly because they don't have enough background themselves. It's really a fait accompli. It is amazing. And I just think this is a potential turning point. Where we recognize, some of us already recognized, but maybe others are now recognizing that the media cannot be trusted. Some of it can be, but not all of it. Most of it can't. Some can be trusted on some things and not on others. That's where I am with it. I listen for some things I believe and some things I don't, depending on the source. So I want to give you just a few more things here because Howard played a little excerpt from an exchange between Cuomo and CNN and Rudy Giuliani, and I wanted you to hear a little longer segment of that because it was. I said to you yesterday that I thought the media, there were some outlets that were beginning to do a mea culpa and sort of apologize. Well, maybe we shouldn't have fill in the blank. Well, maybe we were fill in the blank, but this is the media doubling down. Let's listen.
This is like stretching to prosecute
that's
the man.
You are defining it that way, and it's very
but
clever.
No,
what I'm
it's
saying
not
is
very clever.
You
it's
had a
justice.
You had a panel.
You guys
yes.
On this network.
What have I done?
Have tortured this man for 2 years with collusion, and nobody's apologized.
First of all, there,
so before we talk about obstruction,
there was
apologize for the overreaction of collusion.
Not a chance.
Well, of course you're not.
Not a chance.
Of course
and I'll tell
because
you
you're
why.
Not being fair.
No, please. You know better than that, or you wouldn't.
No,
be
I
here.
Don't know better. Here. I am outraged by the behavior of these networks.
Okay.
Collusion. 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 No collusion.
Okay, here's my case.
Apologize.
Never. Here's my case.
Never?
Never. I didn't do anything wrong. These questions are real.
Well, I
they needed to be regarded as such.
Treasonous?
And they needed to be investigated. Did
people
you hear me say
on,
that?
No, but I heard
do
people
I hold
on this
you to account for what people say that that you don't?
There were people on this network that did. How about this network should apologize? How about Jeff Zucker should
do I ask you to apologize for everything the president says that's not true?
No.
Okay, good. So we're even.
But you asked me to apologize for what I do, and I do. If I accuse
tell me what
somebody,
I did, and I'll apologize.
I'm not saying you should do it.
But then why should I apologize?
Your network should apologize.
I don't apologize for the
network.
Your
network should apologize.
I'm proud of the
and
network.
NBC
I'm proud of the job
apologize.
It does. But
and
I only
the New York
control
Times
what I
should
say.
Apologize.
All right, hold on.
And the Washington Post
hold
should
on,
apologize.
Hold on. I'm not a media critic.
And Adam Schiff should apologize.
Look, that's a question for him. I'm happy to ask it. This is what I'm
before
saying.
Before we start jamming him up in obstruction, could we take a day off and say
I'm not
the
jamming
man
him
was falsely accused?
I'm not jamming him up. I'm saying show people.
This is a cockamamie.
I don't believe he was falsely accused.
Obstruction. He was.
Show people
it's not
what
true.
Is in the record
what do you mean
and let
not?
Them decide.
What do you mean he wasn't falsely accused?
He did a pattern of things that triggered the curiosity and concern of a lifelong prosecutor, Rod Rosenstein. Not some Clintonista, not some Democrat congressman. He called for the special counsel.
You mean the
counsel.
Guy that signed
a letter saying
false
that Comey was a bad
Pfizer
guy.
Affidavit. In which he didn't reveal to the court.
All right, well, he's gonna. They're gonna interrupt his conversation there. But so yeah, you could go on and on. Rod Rosenstein. What Rudy's gonna say is, Rod Rosenstein was part of the cabal to get President Trump. So don't be so surprised. It's not so matter much of being convinced as it is being part of that deep state to actually undermine the president, and that's what Rod Rosenstein did, and he's still there. But I want to talk more about CNN just for a second. I'm trying to figure out the outlet for this, and I don't see what it is, but it might be Medium. I'm not sure. I'm just not sure. It might be MRC. But here's what CNN is saying. We are not investigators. In a desperate attempt to defend his so-called news network coverage of the Russian collusion conspiracy theory, CNN President Jeff Zucker is now bizarrely suggesting that it is not CNN's job to investigate stories before reporting on them. We are not investigators. We are journalists, and our role is to report the facts as we know them, which is exactly what we did. Think about that. We are not investigators. We are not journalists. CNN, are you kidding me? Didn't you think that they were, that they had reporters who actually went out and checked stories out and gathered evidence? They're not journalists? In fact, let me just point out that on their website, there's this big logo of CNN. It says, CNN, in large, bold letters, investigates. And the byline is, seek truth, break news, hold the powerful accountable. So evidently, Jeff Zucker doesn't know what his own website says and what the moniker is for CNN. CNN investigates, it says. But he says, we are not investigators, we are journalists. So, by the way, it was CNN's investigations team, you may recall during this whole scandal, that was forced to retract one of the stories that they reported and fire three of its investigators. So I guess during the course of the time, they thought they were investigators. They evidently didn't get Jeff Zucker's memo that CNN does not investigate. He said, what does they say they do? Our role is to report the facts as we know them. So just what you get off the internet or, on Facebook or, you know, of your neighbor, the facts as we know them. Really? But you know, how do you know facts if you don't investigate? That's the issue. So it just makes no sense. And the New York Times, by the way, the executive editor for the New York Times said, I'm comfortable with our coverage. It is never our job to determine illegality. Well, of course, that's a what do you call it? That's a device there where nobody asked him about illegality. They're talking about reporting things that aren't true. Yeah, they don't have to, but they did. I'm sure the New York Times did declare illegality. They probably, I wish I had the words in front of me, but I'm sure, no doubt, that sometime during the last thousands of articles they've done on this, that they accused and virtually convicted President Trump of treason, of colluding with the enemy, of being Putin's puppet, et cetera, fill in the blanks. So the Washington Post's media columnist Margaret Sullivan wrote a piece on why serious journalists should be proud of, not bullied over, their Russian reporting. And speaking of that, so then Joe, Morning Joe, who used to be a Republican from Florida, it's just stunning. He used to be a good guy. I remember when he was in Congress and he was a good guy, but something happened to him. And he's, you know, I'm not sure if he ever married Mika. They are, you know, hosts and fellow adulterers, you know, to their wives. So maybe that's part of why Joe's gone south, because when you go south in one area of your life, a lot of your life goes south. But this is what Joe has to say about his reporting on this collusion. Here it is.
And just because you're sucking up to Donald Trump, and just because power is all that matters to you, and just because you will justify everything that man does, and just because you are corrupt, just because you're not a journalist, just because you have sold your soul to a personality cult, don't knock reporters at the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Wall Street Journal or the broadcast networks for doing their job right.
Which they'll continue to do.
Which they will continue to do. So you can keep lying. You can keep saying your misogynistic statements. You can keep saying that Hispanics are breeders or they bring diseases to America. You can keep whipping up theories like the Seth Rich theory. That was great for his family, wasn't it? Way to go. You're lecturing the Washington Post and the New York Times on journalism. And by the way, if you write for these papers, and there's some people I respect that write for these papers that have actually written columns condemning the media's behavior, be ashamed of yourself. Be ashamed of yourself. Were there bad actors? Yeah. And guess what? We know who they are.
Yeah, we sure do. I just, it's amazing. So no apology from Joe or no apology from Chris Cuomo or CNN. The Washington Post, by the way, New York Times, CNN, and MSNBC wrote more than 8,500 articles combined about the Russian investigation. They averaged 13 a day. And I talked to you yesterday about the evening news programs dedicating more than 2,200 minutes of coverage. And that wasn't even the entire period of time, as I recall. There's a lot more. There's a comparison here on the important news that was happening during then, and the comparison on what they covered that was important versus the Russian collusion story, and it's pretty stunning stats. We all know what the truth is here, and I don't feel too compelled to try to spell all of that out. There's a great article by Sean Davis in the Wall Street Journal, and he titles it The Catastrophic Media Failure. He said it wasn't merely an error here or there. America's blue-chip journalists botched the entire story from its birth during the presidential campaign to its final breath, and they never stopped congratulating themselves for it. Last year, the New York Times and Washington Post shared a Pulitzer Prize for deeply sourced, relentlessly reported coverage in the public interest that dramatically furthered the nation's understanding of Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election and its connections to the Trump campaign, the president-elect's transition team, and his eventual administration. End quote. That's all one sentence, or all one statement. A 2017 Time magazine cover depicted the White House getting a makeover to transform it into the Kremlin. No unverified rumor was too salacious, and no anonymous tip was too outlandish to print. From CNN to the Times and the Post, from esteemed and experienced reporters to opinion writers and bloggers, everyone wanted a share of the Trump treason beat. Not only did the press fail to destroy Donald Trump's presidency, it provided voluminous evidence for his repeated charge of fake news. He goes on to say, let's see, should I go into this? It's, you know, it's a great article, and we should put that on our Facebook page. It's a catastrophic media failure. It really is a fine article. So what's happening here? There will be, of course, the left is clamoring for the full Mueller report. And we're finding out now that it's not going to happen by next week, which they're demanding. I've heard it's thousands of pages long, but nobody seems to be able to verify that. Senator Rand Paul is asking the president to investigate all of these people. James Clapper, John Brennan, that we've talked about extensively. What was their role in this? The Obama administration, what was his role? Who did what? Jay Johnson, what was his role in that? And so I think there will be investigations. Senator Lindsey Graham says so, and I hope that he's right because we need to see this thing through. I think the president is pretty intent on that, so we'll see. There's a lot more to tell you, so there always is. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
A false witness will not go unpunished.
My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. After she was busted for passing questions to the Clinton campaign prior to a town hall debate and being fired from CNN for doing so, Fox News has now hired former DNC chairwoman Donna Brazile. I have no problem with Fox hiring pundits with varying opinions and political backgrounds. In fact, I think it's healthy for them to do so. But hiring a proven liar and political hack that has publicly demonstrated a willingness to cheat destroys Fox's credibility as a network. Brazile was deemed a pariah and unfit for CNN, but Fox seems to think she's just right for their network's new direction.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
In a world increasingly hostile towards the Christian worldview, can meaningful relationships and dialogue be established to communicate the gospel? This week on Let My People Think, Ravi Zacharias shows us how, in Bridging Two Worlds.
Sundays at 7 p.m. Central.
Let's remind people about the resurrection of Jesus. You can do that by purchasing our He Lives AFA Easter buttons. Order by April 10th to receive yours by Easter, April 21st. You can purchase them in sets of 10, and the more you buy, the more you save. Get yours now at afastore.net. And thanks be to God, who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. He lives.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Never Trumpers, who have bitterly opposed Donald Trump since day one, just had their worst day ever when Bob Mueller and Bill Barr cleared the president of all collusion and obstruction of justice charges. Never Trumpers have become the Colin Kaepernicks of the Republican Party, taking a knee, sitting out the game, carping from the sidelines while everybody else on their team is trying to advance the ball. They are starting to look like petulant whiners and are only hurting themselves. They haven't laid a glove on the president since they started. They are now faced with the likely prospect of marginalizing themselves for another 6 years, only now nobody will care. It's long past time for these never-Trumpers to get over themselves, stand to their feet, and get behind their quarterback before they wind up with no voice, no audience, and no one who cares.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Donald Trump issued yesterday what may be the most important executive order of his presidency. It addresses the potential nation-ending threat posed by electromagnetic pulse, or EMP, to our critical infrastructure, whether enemy-induced or naturally occurring. The very good news is the order draws heavily on the work of the Congressional EMP Commission. It has long warned of such threats and provided detailed recommendations for mitigating them. The bad news is that previous failures to act as Mr. Trump has now done have left us dangerously at risk, and the order's timelines for corrective action and the inevitable reliance for their implementation on agencies resistant to such initiatives means that exposure will continue for years. Thankfully, the president has made National Security Advisor John Bolton responsible for getting the job done. We must pray he will do so in time. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
This is decent. This is right.
The State Department is expanding the Trump administration's efforts to block federal funding from groups providing abortions.
We will enforce a strict prohibition on backdoor funding schemes and add runs around our policy. American taxpayer dollars will not be used to underwrite abortions.
In one of his first acts in office, President Trump reinstated the so-called Mexico City policy, a Reagan-era directive requiring foreign service organizations receiving U.S. funding to certify they refuse to provide abortion services. Today, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced the U.S. is prohibiting those groups from funding other groups providing abortions. The administration is also cutting $210,000 to a commission in the Organization of American American states, claiming it's lobbying for abortion access in the Western Hemisphere.
The institutions of the OAS should be focused on addressing crises in Cuba, Nicaragua, and in Venezuela, not in advancing the pro-abortion cause.
The OAS did not respond to a request for comment. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi tweeted, quote, "There is no end to the depths of the Trump administration's cruelty. Millions of women around the world rely on U.S.-funded health assistance, and millions more will be arbitrarily left without care due to this shameful decision by Secretary Pompeo." Pompeo disagreed, claiming the U.S. policy only targets abortion access.
One need not perform abortions in order to protect people from HIV. They're fundamentally disconnected.
This is the second time the administration has expanded the Mexico City policy. When asked if officials are looking at further restrictions, a State Department spokesperson says the administration has nothing more to announce.
That was Rich Hedson of Fox News. And honestly, that's such good news. My understanding, of course, I wasn't there yesterday, but when Mike Pompeo spoke yesterday, people that I know that were present said it was just stunning to hear the things that he said. Boy, has he grown into that position. I think he's really found his stride. And he said some inspiring things. I'll give you some ideas of it. Here is a tweet from Rachel Bovard, who's often a guest with us. He made a huge pro-life announcement at State this morning. This is Mike Pompeo. "This administration has shown that we can continue to meet our global health goals while refusing to subsidize the killing of unborn babies." And the backdrop of this, just to help you understand, is that the first time I saw this happen was in the Clinton administration, when America has been generous for generations with other countries, with foreign aid, all kinds of foreign aid, you know, to help people starving in various parts of the world, disaster relief, all of that. But the Clintons were the first ones that I know of, that doesn't mean they were the first, but that I knew of, who politicized those dollars. And under Mrs. Clinton's influence, and Bill Clinton's also, because they never saw an abortion they didn't love, funding and help to third world countries was withheld if they did not support abortions. It was amazing. And that the UN at the time, Concerned Women for America was an NGO at the United Nations. And of course, I came in right when Bush was beginning. It was right at the end after President Clinton had stepped down. But we were feeling the effects of all of that. And the women from third world countries ended up being the most eloquent on the issue of life. They couldn't believe that their countries were being forced to embrace abortion in order to get help from the United States. That's when it started. And during the Barack Obama years, it sort of turned a bit. Abortion was certainly part of it, but the emphasis was on LGBT rights and gay marriage. So if countries did not support LGBT rights, tax dollars aid dollars were withheld, which do come from our tax dollars. Aid dollars were withheld from those countries. It was amazing how they used every tool they had to spread their leftist, immoral political views. So stepping into this now is President Trump trying to reverse this stuff. And it is amazing that he has been reversing, with the help of Mike Pompeo, a lot of these things. So I'm going to read what Pompeo said again to the group of people sitting there who are used to what I just told you. The politicization of our dollars, our foreign aid dollars, withheld if countries don't perform abortions and don't support LGBT rights. So Pompeo says, this administration has shown that we can continue to meet our global health goals while refusing to subsidize the killing of unborn babies. Rachel goes on to say, when Pompeo was asked if this would hurt women around the world, he said, "The theory that not protecting every human life is destroying human lives is perverse on its face." And that was just a little bit of what Mike Pompeo said yesterday. He also said the Trump administration has made clear since the beginning of the administration that the total dollars allocated for women's health issues and global health issues remains unchanged. We're just ensuring that those dollars aren't used to underwrite abortions. Let me read to you. This was the fact sheet on Pompeo's statement. I'm going to read a little bit of it to you. It says in this fact sheet that Mike Pompeo, a strong pro-life advocate, is now following through on President Trump's mandate by ensuring the Mexico City policy is enforced to the broadest extent possible. And of course, the Mexico City policy was passed in 1984, and it was to make sure that taxpayer money for abortion would be based on respect for human life, enhancement of human dignity, and strengthening of the family, not for abortions. Okay, so to go back, the strengthening of the Mexico City policy is going to take this form. The U.S. State Department will refuse to work with any foreign NGO engaged in the abortion business. The U.S. State Department will also refuse to fund foreign NGOs, that's non-governmental organizations, that's like the World Health Organization. It's all, you know, I said, told you CWA was an NGO. That means we had a place at the United Nations, a delegation that we could send. You're not officially a government entity. You're non-governmental. So, and other foreign NGOs, U.S. money. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm reading the wrong say. The U.S. State Department will also refuse to fund foreign NGOs that give money to other foreign NGOs engaged in international abortion. Money is fungible. No longer will the State Department turn a blind eye to foreign NGOs that take U.S. money and provide funding to other foreign NGOs that perform abortions or promote them. As Secretary Pompeo said, this administration has shown that we can continue to meet the global health goals while refusing to subsidize the killing of unborn babies. This is a day to mark. I'm telling you, that's incredible. And that's just incredible. What else can I say? You ask me why conservative Christians can support a man like Donald Trump. Well, if that's an answer, that in itself is an answer. There on the other side of this, on the flip side of this, yesterday a federal judge overturned North Carolina's law, which bans abortions after 20 weeks. The judge decided I'll just read it. In his opinion, District Judge William Osteen said that any laws that prevented abortions at any point prior to viability were unconstitutional. He said his decision accords universally with those of other federal courts that have considered the constitutionality of 20-week bans and similar week or event-specific abortion bans. It's amazing to me, you know, how judges have become so full of themselves that they can declare suddenly that marriage, which was established by God, is no longer between one man and one woman, that suddenly they have a better idea. They actually have the power. It's almost like the hubris of thinking we can control the climate. We can, unless we're going to declare that we're going to cause rainstorms, we're going to stop hurricanes. We humans are going to do this. And then we're also going to change marriage, and we're going to also make it okay to kill babies. It just doesn't work that way. And the hubris of mankind to think that we could do that is pretty amazing. It is indeed. And so yesterday, back now to an issue that we talk about a lot. I'm going to give you a couple of updates in the news, and then I'll tell you what happened yesterday in the House. In McAllen, Texas, yesterday, Acting Immigration and Customs Enforcement Director Ronald Vitiello on Tuesday said that federal law enforcement on the southern border has in recent months been overwhelmed processing families. It's draining resources, and it's allowing other people to sneak into the United States. Last Saturday, Border Patrol agents working at an immigration checkpoint on Highway 70, on a highway 70 miles north of McAllen, found 15 Chinese citizens in the back of a tractor trailer. These Chinese nationals may have been apprehended at the border itself. They are estimating that agents are spending more than 49,000 hours facilitating medical trips and watching patients while they are in hospitals from late December through late February. So you get the point. They can't really do their jobs, and we have 15 Chinese nationals. I'm sure when people argue that no one else is coming in besides Central Americans and Mexicans, you know that that can't possibly be true. Do you not think it makes sense that people from Muslim countries, people from, you know, the Middle East, East Asia, would not be trying that? People, poor people from around the globe who want to get in, Africans? Does it not make sense to you? That all kinds of people, why not? The border is virtually open. I would do it. I'd make a run for it. If I were in another country and I could possibly do it, I would. And that's what's happening. And so for them to try to tell us that it's confined to Central and Central America and in Mexico and South America. It's just ridiculous. I'm sure that's the vast majority, but it's not all of them. And in the Ninth Circuit Court, they just dismissed Kate Steinle's family's lawsuits against San Francisco as a sanctuary city. So here's the thing. You remember, it was July of 2015. Kate Steinle was murdered on a pier in broad daylight by a bullet shot from a stolen .40 caliber gun of Jose Inez Garcia Zarate, an illegal alien from Mexico who was deported five times, released from San Francisco jail 2.5 months before without notification to ICE, remained in the country despite seven felony convictions. So the family sued the city of San Francisco and former Sheriff Ross Mercurimi for negligence, but has been rebuffed by the district judge and now the Ninth Circuit. The courts have finally found that a non-justice claim, when it comes from the Americans killed by illegal aliens thanks to city officials violating immigration laws. So basically, this is coming from Daniel Horowitz writing this morning. He says, victims of illegal aliens cannot sue sanctuary cities for thwarting federal law and causing the deaths of their loved ones. But illegal aliens can now sue our country and win judgments against law enforcement for enforcing federal law. And then Daniel writes, welcome to the new America. So coming on the heels of those two stories, yesterday the House voted to try to override the veto of President Trump to stop his emergency order to get funds to build a border wall. So this is how it went down. The final vote was 248 to 181. It was, I think there were 30-something votes short of doing the veto override. And you will be interested to know that all the Democrats voted to override the president's veto and 14 Republicans. And I'm going to tell you who they were. Justin Amash. I don't know all the first names here. I just have last names listed. Fitzpatrick, Gallagher, Herrera Butler, William Hurd, Texas, Johnson, South Dakota, Katko, Massey, Rogers from Washington, Rooney from Florida, Sensenbrenner, Stefanik, Upton, and Walden from Washington State. And so those are your fateful betrayers of the president and of your safety on the border, voting with the Democrats. But, of course, they failed, and I'm sure the Senate will take up the vote, too. And then the House Armed Services Committee denied. Remember yesterday I told you the Pentagon transferred $1 billion to fund a border fence? Well, right away, the House Armed Services Committee sent a letter saying that the committee has completed its review of the proposed reprogramming, and the committee denies this request. Also in the Senate, the Senate Appropriations Committee sent a letter to the acting Secretary of Defense, Patrick Shanahan, calling the move a dollar-for-dollar theft from other readiness needs of our armed forces. Now, you remember that this is a sort of a slush fund for the military that they can spend any way they want. And so here's the bottom line. The committees probably have no jurisdiction over this because the money was already allocated to the Pentagon, and the Pentagon is following the request of their commander-in-chief. So the chances are these committees can't stop it, but you get the political point, don't you? The Republican Senate Appropriations Committee, I wish I knew who the chair was. I would Google that really quickly if I could. I'll do that as soon as I say goodbye to you. Sent a letter saying that the move was a dollar-for-dollar theft from other readiness needs of our armed forces. Really? The Pentagon got millions of dollars. That was a big dispute in the last budget, more than even some conservatives were comfortable with. So I think that they can afford this, and I think the president must protect us. Thank God he is. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.